This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
What about these contempt allegations or these contempt motions that have been filed that are going to be looked at, the ones that McLeland has filed against Rossi and Baldwin? We're going back again to the evidence that was leaked at. Why do we keep going in circles on this aspect of this case? I thought we kind of settled that. We figured out what was going on. The Supreme Court put them back in place, saying that was not enough or grounds to be removed. But now we're going back on this again? Is the state still trying to get Baldwin and Rossi kicked off again? I mean, Gull could potentially do it, but why? What's going on here with these new filings?
I don't even know if she could. Like, to be honest with you, I think the Supreme Court was very of the Indiana Supreme Court was very, very clear mm-hmm. about their, you know, their opinion on that, and that the things that she had estimated were enough to amount to gross negligence, which again is not a thing in criminal defense law or criminal work. That's a civil burden of gross negligence. It just doesn't exist in criminal law. It's like she just said something, mm-hmm. you know, it's like she was on the bench and said those words. And then I'm sure, you know, but then she repeated them, like she doubled, tripled down.
Yeah,
on it. It wasn't like she just kind of said this phrase that doesn't really apply here. I mean, you're absolutely right. It's been litigated, mm-hmm. you know, like there's a term in the law called res judicata, and it means that the issue's already been litigated and resolved. And in my estimation, that has already been, we've already been over that.
Yeah.
Like all the, you know, up in front of the Supreme Court, they talked about it, you know? So it, like, to me, it was a move by McLeland to continue to try to besmirch and tarnish the reputation of these lawyers and doing it publicly. Mm-hmm. Like he is in a position now where everything appears to me to be like it makes no sense in terms of the underlying case.
No.
Right. I mean, like the contempt charge, and we like, and that's the problem. There were a couple of counter filings. Dave Hennessy filed one. And then, Michael Oscott, he filed another pleading as well, both on behalf of Baldwin and Rossi. Mm-hmm. And, Oscott's thing was really well written and he really broke it down. It was pretty snarky. You know, but he was basically saying like, Nick, everything that you filed is wrong. Mm-hmm. Like you didn't even properly file the like, we don't know if it's a civil or if it's a criminal contempt hearing. Like, what are you asking for? Cause you didn't do it properly. If it's criminal, you can't try it under Rick Allen's case number. You have to file it. It's got to get its own case number. It's a different thing. There's discovery that has to be reciprocated between the parties. And, you know, and then we get those two things filed basically saying, Nick, you screwed up.
Yeah.
And then Nick didn't, you know, Nick starts filing things and he's saying, okay, well, I turned over all my discovery to the defense and what I intend on presenting it on the 18th of March. And they're not turning theirs over to me, which again, sounds like reciprocal discovery, which if you're having to read through the tea leaves, because he didn't articulate what kind of contempt he was going for, or he was seeking, you know, whether it's criminal or civil, you know, because he's asking for reciprocal discovery, it makes it seem like it's criminal contempt.
Yeah.
You know, and he's potentially asking for jail time, you know, so.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like very sloppily done, if you will. It's more like, oh, yeah, you're going to do this. Well, I'm going to do this without a whole lot of thought into what you're saying or what you're doing, requiring clarification and all of that. It just it seems just messy. And unnecessarily messy.
I don't know how much of what's going on with McLeland is inexperience or just like vitriol. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like he is not an experienced prosecutor. Mm-hmm. He's never tried anything even remote. I don't think that he's tried a murder case mm-hmm. and he's definitely never tried anything like this.
Yeah.
You know, like he, I forget what year he was elected, but it wasn't that long ago, mm-hmm. you know? So like, he just, I like, and he's filing things that he's probably never even thought to have filed in any other case that he's handled. Mm-hmm. You know, Carroll County is not a huge county.
Yeah.
He's handling much smaller cases typically. He's not handling things of this magnitude where, you know, he's basically got the entire defense bar, not just in Indiana, but like everywhere, mm-hmm. is like looking at this case and eyeballing him, mm-hmm. and side-eyeing him, really. You know, it's, yeah. like the defense bar, you know, I don't apologize for it. You know, I'm pretty adamant on my YouTube channel, which is Defense Diaries Podcast. You should check it out. In terms of like that case in particular, I've taken a position, you know, mm-hmm. and my position is that they're destroying Rick Allen's ability to get a fair trial, that they destroyed his ability to be able to get a speedy trial, which I believe was an actual strategy that they were going to employ. I don't think it was like, I use that all the time, you know, when you're trying to gain leverage on the state, you know, because they hate it, mm-hmm. you know, like, oh, yeah, we're going to really push you to trial way before you're going to be ready. Or, you know, let's work out a plea deal that's something that we can work with. You know, mm-hmm. what I mean? You know, you use it as a tool in your belt. This wasn't that.
Yeah.
Like they were actually ready to go to trial. And, you know, everything that you're seeing from McClelland just reeks of inexperience to me, as opposed to, you know, like just that he's a knucklehead or that it's, you know,
yeah.
coming from a place of like complete vitriol or hatred, or, you know what I mean? I just get the sense that he's way in over his skis is the way that I feel.
And that's an interesting thing, because quite often ignorance can sometimes very much look like conspiracy. And when it's not, it can just be ignorant behavior because he doesn't have the experience needed to really handle this. And that combined with everything else that's going on just makes the perfect storm that it is.
Yeah. And I mean, it looks like he's got Gull like firmly entrenched behind him. Mm-hmm. Like there's no part of me that if they worked in the same county, if she was a judge in Carroll County, I'd feel much differently. He's never tried a case in front of her.
Yeah.
You know, he's never been in front of her before. Like there does not exist that relationship between mm-hmm. Gull and McClelland at all. It doesn't, yeah. there is no pre-existing that I'm aware of, any kind of pre-existing relationship between the two of them that would warrant her, you know, potentially blowing up her career, you know, to be in cahoots with Nick McClelland. So yeah. I don't think that that's a thing. I think that she's prosecution sided judge
yeah.
heavily. And I think that she took great exception to the way that these guys were trying the case. Mm-hmm. You know, she's, you know, she's a firm hand.
Yeah.
Like I think that she's used to having control over the attorneys in her county. And I think that ultimately that she felt that she didn't have that type of control over these two guys, and she was going to fix that. Mm-hmm. And she was going to fix it by getting them off the case. You know what I mean? And it's like, I've told everybody what my theory is behind that. I like, and it's yeah. for me, it had, you know, she picked the things that she could dig up that she thought might amount to, you know, enough to boot them off the case. But the real reason that she wanted them off the case was to kick this can down the road as soon as she found out that they were planning on going to trial January 8th. Like there, no one is ever changing my mind on that.
No.
Like nope. that, like I have zero doubt. Like Nick McClelland was not ready to go to trial. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you that.
Yep.
Would he have shown up with his file? Yes, of course he would have. Mm-hmm. Would he have been anywhere near where he needed to be in terms of preparation? Not even close. Mm-hmm. And like that's not, again, an indictment on Nick McClelland or his ability as an attorney. It's just cases like this, when you're the prosecution, it's a massive undertaking. And he's got a really small office, and like in terms of prosecutor's office, very, very little resources. I mean, he didn't get a second chair, Luttrell, until October. Mm-hmm. So he was flying solo that whole time, you know, because it's like, it's a very small prosecutor's office. He's trying to handle this thing, and it's too much for one person to handle. It just is, you know? So the concept of him having to be ready in January must have been mortifying.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because I mean, you can only imagine the amount of pressure that that guy has on him from not most importantly, the victims' families, who I'm sure he is assured, you know, that we got the right guy here. But Doug Carter, Tony Liggett, like all the cops are in this guy's ear. You know, he's got a massive amount of pressure on him. So, you know, I mean, it's, I don't admire the position he's in because he's in a tough spot, you know, but in terms of how this thing's going to shake out, only God knows, Tony.
Exactly.
Only God knows.
Sick of the ads?
We are too.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.